Welcome to the Garden Basics with Farmer Fred podcast. If you're just a beginning gardener or you want good gardening information, well, you've come to the right spot. Are you looking for easy to grow fruit trees that are loaded with fruit year in and year out? Well, it's hard to beat peaches and plums. Today, we talk with a fruit tree expert about the delicious choices available, how to care for them, and how to battle the few problems that they get. Also, our favorite college horticulture professor, Debbie Flower, takes the bitterness out of cucumbers for us. We're burp-free on this episode 28 of Garden Basics with Farmer Fred, and we'll do it all in under 30 minutes. Let's go. It's always great to talk with Phil Purcell from Dave Wilson Nursery. Dave Wilson Nursery is a wholesale grower of fruit and nut trees, and they sell those trees to a retail nursery in your area, your independent retail nurseries. And two of their best-selling varieties of fruit trees, as you might imagine, peaches and plums. And Phil, I guess one reason they are so popular is, well, they're easy to grow and they're tasty.
They are. I mean, summertime favorites, right? When you think of fresh fruit this time of year, you think peaches and plums. That is summertime fruit eating. So,
what are the popular peach varieties? And I imagine every region of the country has their own favorites.
Yeah, they do. And then kind of different cultures have their, you know, favorites too. There's the old time O. Henry's, Alberta's, you know, and the yellow peaches, Red Baron for Southern California, contender for out in the East Coast is a big time favorite. Then there's white varieties. So Babcock, you know, everyone's familiar with that one. Donut peach, which is a white donut peach. You find in all the specialty stores. And that one, the Asian culture loves the donut peach. And it's because it's very high in sugars. Problem with that is a lot of times you don't see in your regular grocery store, because it's so high in sugars, it bruises. So the best way of getting a donut peach is just go ahead and growing it yourself.
And one reason it's called a donut peach is it's kind of flat. It's not necessarily globular like you might imagine a peach is. It's kind of flat like a donut.
It is. It's known as a saucer peach or pinto peach. It's like a flat donut.
And as you said, very, very sweet.
Very sweet. So peaches come in two categories, or we categorize them ourselves as either acidic or non-acidic. Mm. So acidic is when you remember that old time peach, you know, the summertime peach where you bite into it and has that sweet, little slightly tart, juicy flavor. That's an acidic peach. And generally speaking, those are all going to be all your yellow peaches. Floyd Zager really did a lot of hybridizing. And like the Europeans and the Asians, they don't tend to like the acidic peaches as much as the white peaches, which is really more of a sweet, sugary type of peach. So those are the two peaches that are your choices when you go into a retail garden center, the pick. And you start, do you want a yellow peach or do you want a white peach?
Floyd Zager, of course, a fruit tree hybridizer of note, probably the most famous hybridizer in America.
He is, absolutely.
Now, two terms that people may come across when they're looking at peaches are freestone and cling peach. What is the difference?
So freestone is, if you take a peach and you cut it in half and twist it, if the flesh pops away from the pit itself, that's a freestone. If you try to twist it and it doesn't, well, that's a cling peach, and the flesh will actually cling on to the stone itself. Just two different eating wise. Generally, people kind of prefer the freestone because you can, you know, easily separate it from the pit and then cut it into slices. Cling peaches are make very good eating peaches. They're also tend to be the ones that the canners use are the clean peaches. So
now, one limiting factor when it comes to peaches, and if you're looking for a tasty peach, if you go to the Dave Wilson Nursery website, davewilson.com, you can find their list of the best tasting varieties over their taste test results that they conducted over 20 years. And among the top scorers for peaches include the Harkin and the O'Henry, but they have a requirement of a lot of chill hours. A chill hour is any hour below 45 degrees, ideally between 32 and 45 degrees during the period of November through February. And most areas of the country, if they have cold winters, they get over 800 chill hours, which is perfect for the O'Henry and the Harkin. But for areas like Southern California or the Southern United States that may have fewer chill hours, what are the best tasting varieties for them?
Probably one of my favorites is Red Baron. And the Red Baron is an acidic, high flavor peach, but it's also an edible ornamental. When I say edible ornamental, when the Red Baron blooms, the flowers are of almost a red color as opposed to the typical pink. So it's a really, really dark pinky red bloom. So it's a beautiful tree, and the fruit it produces is great. And then that's for the yellow peach. On the white peach, you know, one of the favorites again is a donut. The donut peach is very popular. Interesting thing about the donut peach is that it is very low chill adaptable. However, it is a very cold hardy peach. So you can plant a donut peach in San Diego and it perform well. And you can plant a donut peach over on the East Coast, on the Eastern Seaboard, and it perform well.
All right. Yeah, the donut white peach has a chill requirement of 200 to 300 hours, which is not much at all. And we should point out that the reason those chill hours are necessary, it helps the tree set its buds for the following season.
Yes. It's becoming even more out here in California. It's become more evident that we're acquiring less chill hours every year. So, you know, all the breeders, they're very, you know, cognizant of this, and they're breeding for the fact that we're not having as much chill hours and that they have to focus in on lower chill fruit.
One of my favorite peaches is actually a miniature peach. It only gets maybe 5 or 6 feet tall. But what I really like about it, besides the tasty fruit, is the beautiful flower show it puts on in the spring. And that's the Garden Gold miniature peach. It's a yellow freestone peach. And in fact, the picture accompanying our little chat here at the Garden Basics with Farmer Fred podcast is that Garden Gold peach in full bloom. And it's just gorgeous pinkish reddish blooms.
It is. It's show-stopping. In our mother block at the nursery, when all of our miniature peaches are in bloom, it's incredible. You know, most of them have double flowers and anywhere from mid pinks to, you know, almost a reddish color. And these miniature peaches, interesting enough, are true dwarfs. So we actually have to graft these miniature peaches on a standard rootstock so that at full maturity, it'll get up to 6 feet tall. Oh. It's just, you know, they've been just developed over the years and kind of hybridized to have full flavor. But it's great for someone who has just, you know, a small backyard or a larger container that they want to keep it in for a few years to have a peach tree. You know, this is something that at Dave Wilson Nursery, we're really starting to focus in and introduce new varieties. So we understand that yards are getting smaller, but people still want full-size fruit and, you know, like I say, edible ornamental.
Now, we should point out there's a whole different category of peaches called flowering peaches that have been developed basically for those flowers, but not much in the way of fruit development, correct?
Correct. So the flowering peaches are very popular with the flower growers, the florists, that fresh cut market for to coincide with, you know, different holidays early in the season, like Chinese New Year's. So there's early flowering red and there's peppermint, and those are grown for the flowers itself, but the fruit is very unremarkable in tasting.
What are the problems people may encounter over the years with peach trees? I know here in California, peach leaf curl is a big problem, but it's more of a nuisance than a problem.
Correct. Yeah. Peach leaf curl is something that, you know, can be prevented by just spraying, dormant sprays in the wintertime. That seems to be the number one, quote unquote, nuisance of a peach tree. And that's kind of throughout the United States is leaf curl. Other than that, understanding that peach trees kind of have a normal cycle in life. Most of the growers out here will replace peach trees after about 20 years, kind of like almonds. So it's if you have a really old peach tree, let's say 30 years, and you start seeing it declining, and maybe it starts becoming a little bit more susceptible to insects, it's just because that tree is an old tree. Unlike apple trees, which are long-lived, peach trees, 20, 25 years is its maximum.
All right. Yeah. Keep that in mind. If you're planting peach trees, if you start seeing decline after a couple of decades, life is too short to put up with a problem plant. Time to plant something else.
It really is.
So you mentioned insects. What are the major insect pests of peach trees?
Peach trees can get what's known as a peach tree borer. And it's just the larva of a beetle. And it tends to attack trees that are kind of stressed, so older trees or trees that have been neglected. And what it will do is the borer itself will kind of eat around the inside of the bark layer, and then it'll stop water flowing up to the leaves. And then you can, you tend to have insect or problems with it going forward. The key to anything like that is if you keep the vigor of your fruit trees up, you're less likely to encounter, any type of insect problems. Insects really go after the weakest of the flock out there.
Let's make some vigorous peach trees then. What are some tips for watering and fertilization and care of peach trees?
So peaches, we like people to, think about watering and maybe pre-plant it. You want to make sure that it gets a good start. But as a tree increases in size, you'll need to increase the water, but the frequency isn't as necessary as the amount of water that it's put on. Also, think of watering any type of fruit trees as almost like a bell-shaped curve. In early March, that tree will require less water than it will require in July right now, the heat of the summer. So if you have it on a regular timer and you have it set at a March setting, you're going to want to make sure that in July you increase the amount of water that you're putting down. And then when you get into September, you want to decrease it. Think of it as, a bell-shaped curve. It's really hard to say how much water to put on each tree because everyone's soil is a little bit different. But if the tree's not getting enough water, it's going to let you know. It's going to go ahead, start wilting. So that's when you need to apply more. And you're going to generally find that in July and August.
For areas of the country that get summer rain, do peach trees still need regular irrigation?
It kind of depends. If you get regular summer rains, that's probably going to be sufficient enough. I'm thinking more of here on the West Coast, which, we have that Mediterranean climate where we get no summer rain. And irrigation is definitely something that needs to be done. But on the East Coast, when you get heavy rains, that's generally going to be sufficient enough.
What about fertilizer for peach trees? Is it necessary?
We really like, when we go back and talk about the vigor of a tree, generally speaking, is it gets a lot of vigor from fertilizers. And we at Dave Wilson Nursery, we like to recommend organic fertilizers. And a kind of a good, if you want to just very easy rule of thumb, is you fertilize right after the fruit sets around pea size with an organic fruit tree fertilizer. And then once again, midsummer with that, organic fruit tree fertilizer. And then towards the end of summer, one more application. And that last application gets the peach tree ready for the winter. And the reason we like organic fertilizers is that they tend to be very slow releasing. So if you over-applicate, the odds of you burning the tree or stressing it is fairly low. That's, why we recommend organics over, let's say, something like a triple 15 or triple 16 would be fine, But you got to be really careful when you apply that in the heat of the summer. Whereas with organic fertilizers, like I say, since they break down slowly, it just makes it easy for the homeowner not to be overly concerned.
As we've mentioned on this program before, generally speaking, organic fertilizers have single-digit numbers on the label. Those three numbers you see on any fertilizer represent the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium in that product. And if you choose a fertilizer with single digits, like a 888 or a 522 or something like that, chances are it's probably an organic fertilizer.
It is. It is.
Well, before we run out of time here, let's talk plums. I mean, plums are just so tasty, and it is, I believe the word in your industry is precocious.
In that
they tend to produce way too much fruit.
They really are. I mean, we call them, you know, maximizing your yield for a fruit tree. That describes a plum, right? They set heavy fruit. It's fantastic fruit. And it's one of those fail-safe trees where people say, well, you know, sometimes I have a hard time, you know, with this fruit tree or that tree. They generally never say that with a plum tree, because those things, plum trees just produce fruit. And this is throughout the country. I mean, it's another one of those where they thrive, and there's varieties that do great in low-cho areas. There's European plums for really cold areas. There's Asian plums that do really good in cold areas. I mean, they're super adaptable. And it's one of those where if you plant a plum tree, you're going to get fruit off of it a lot.
Are the Japanese plums sweeter than the European plums?
They are. They're sweeter, and they're definitely juicier than European plums. And that's why they're the favorite ones that you see in grocery stores. European plums are known as prunes, whereas Japanese plums are known as plums.
Now, in the taste test that I have participated in at Dave Wilson Nursery over the years, and when it comes to tasting plums, one of my favorites has been the Weeping Santa Rosa plum, which is just so sweet.
Santa Rosa was developed by Luther Burbank, and that's still the number one home and garden plum out there. It's, once again, I say it's very adaptable. Does well in Southern California, the southern states, and it also does very well, you know, in the Midwest, in the Eastern Seaboard. It's the classic plum that everyone is kind of thinking of when they think of plums. The Weeping Santa Rosa, it was a sport that was found, and it actually naturally grows like a weeping flowering cherry. So it never gets super tall like some plum trees can, because it just has this weeping canopy. But the fruit is just, you know, another variation of the traditional Santa Rosa plum.
Now, when people go to their local nursery and they see some Dave Wilson plum trees, they may see the Emerald Butte plum, which, again, a development of Floyd Zager. And that's a taste test winner, too.
It is. And in fact, it's my favorite plum. I have one. I was checking it in the yard yesterday. It's a very late plum. And it, for us, it produces in the months of September and October. And so when I say the months of September and October, it actually hangs on the tree for about 8 weeks. Hmm. You can eat it hard ripe, and it tends to be green late August, early September. And if you let it hang on the tree, it'll turn to a yellow, and it'll become very soft and very juicy. And that's what you see in October. Difference between something like that and a Santa Rosa plum. Santa Rosa plum produces its fruit, and it tends to drop all at one time, you know, in the 2 week period, where there are certain varieties of plums like Emerald Butte, or another one would be Burgundy plum. And I have one of those in my orchard. That's another one that hangs on the tree for an extended period. So you don't have to, you know, worry about eating all those plums all at once. You have an extended period of eating them.
And for those listening in Southern California or maybe down in Florida, are there low-chill, tasty plum varieties?
They are. They're in, you know, my favorite low-chill plum is definitely the Burgundy plum. And the reason I like that is because it also acts as a pollinizer. Mm. Most plums are self-fertile. You only need one. Burgundy's is the case. Same with Santa Rosa. But let's say if you want to venture out and maybe plant a pluot or pluary that needs a pollinizer. If you have a Burgundy in your yard, that's going to take care of all its pollinizing needs, yet still give you all the fruit you want. So, I mean, Tom and I, you know, we really recommend the Burgundy for Southern California, low CHO areas, but it's also still hard to beat that Santa Rosa plum.
Excuse
Tom's
me.
Fountain. Tom is our Southern California salesman, and he really is, when it comes to fruit trees, he's probably one of the most knowledgeable in the country on all different fruits, whether it's citrus or stone fruit.
That would be Tom Spellman. Now, you used a couple of terms that people may not be familiar with, and they should be familiar with because they'll fall in love with them. You mentioned pluot and pluary. So a pluot would be a plum apricot cross. A pluary, people can probably guess, is a plum cherry cross.
Yeah, and those are just interspecific, just hybrid fruit that are very common out here in California. You go in a grocery store and they'll list them as, you know, as pluots. Whereas maybe back east, those pluots are still being marketed as plums.
Mm. Hmm. And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, do not judge the quality of a pluot by what you buy at a grocery store.
Absolutely not.
Judge the pluot by somebody's backyard tree or maybe something you might find at a farmer's market, because the supermarket pluots, I think, were just bred for shipping and stability and not necessarily for taste.
Correct. Absolutely.
We've learned a lot about peaches and plums today from Phil Purcell. If you want to learn more about fruit trees, all sorts of fruit and nut trees, visit the Dave Wilson website, davewilson.com, where not only are you going to find taste test results and information about just about every fruit tree going, you're going to find videos that can help you raise that fruit tree or nut tree correctly and prune them as well. It's their Fruit Tube video series. You can find it at Dave Wilson. Wilson.com. Phil Purcell, thanks for a few minutes of your time.
Yep. Thanks for having me on.
As you know, there's many ways you can reach us to ask garden questions. You can email them in to fred@farmerfred.com. You can leave a message at the Get Growing with Farmer Fred Facebook page or at Farmer Fred on Twitter. Or at my Instagram page, Farmer Fred Hoffman. Also, there's a phone number. 916-292-8964. 916-292-8964. If you don't want to talk into the phone, you can text a message to that number. And that's exactly what a very bitter gardener did recently. He or she wrote in and said, "I have never managed to grow vigorous cucumber vines, and the cucumbers themselves are often bitter. I've heard many explanations for this, including a lack of water, weather that's too hot, weather that's too cold. What exactly is the truth?" Well, when we go searching for the truth, we have to bring in our favorite college horticultural professor, retired, Debbie Flower, who can tell us what is truth. And Debbie, when it comes to cucumbers, what is the truth about bitterness?
Well, they can be bitter.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.
They produce an enzyme or a chemical, I'll just say a chemical inside of them that causes bitterness. And of course, there's been lots of breeding done on cucumbers, and that chemical in general is overridden by other chemicals that cause sweetness in cucumbers. And the breeders have worked on that and made the cucumbers better and better. But I have to admit, I have grown bitter cucumbers, and I have purchased cucumbers from the store that are bitter. And bitter cucumbers are definitely a disappointment, not what we're expecting, not what we want. So when we're growing our own, which is a wonderful thing to do, I love cucumbers and I love growing my own. There are some things that we need can help us not have bitter cucumbers. One is to grow them in the right place. And that's always the case with plants. Right plant, right place. And for cucumbers, that means a warm, sunny spot. Full sun as much as possible. And because cool temperatures and shady places tend to cause bitterness in the cucumbers. Picking them smaller rather than larger. The longer they stay on the vine, the more chance there is for the bitterness to accumulate in the plant. And, of course, take good care of them. You want a healthy plant that's been fertilized, irrigated regularly, or watered regularly with rain. One of the things that's commonly stated that causes bitterness is irregular watering. And that may be true, but scientifically, it's not been consistently proven to be true. So take good care of the plants, water it, mulch it, and fertilize as needed. If you do happen to get a bitter cucumber, peel the skin off and peel more of the skin at the stem end. So the place where the cucumber was attached to the plant will have more of the chemical that causes bitterness than the other end of the cucumber. And maybe you can save it that way. But the other thing is to buy a hybrid. If you're starting them from seed, if you're growing them in your yard, plant them directly in the ground. Plant the seed directly in the ground when soil temperatures are 60 degrees or more. And grow them, as we said, with all the correct cultural practices. But pick the correct seed. Pick a hybrid. Ones that are called burpless tend to have less of the chemical that causes bitterness. And others that have thinner skins tend to have more of the sweetness in them than the bitterness. So picking the correct cucumber cultivar at the very get-go when you're planting them in the ground will also help prevent that bitterness.
The Contra Costa County Master Gardeners actually did some trialing with cucumber varieties. And among the hybrid varieties that they grew that turned out to be less bitter included Diva, Sweet Success, Cool Breeze, Summer Dance, Improved Long Green, Eversweet, Ashley, Sunnybrook, Satakoi Hybrid, and Lemon. And for those who aren't aware, Contra Costa County is in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I don't know if that has an effect on those choices or not.
Yes, climate could be a factor. So ask around, talk to your friends and neighbors who are growing cucumbers and see what they've got that's not bitter. Talk to your Master Gardener program or your Cooperative Extension office, and they may have some hints for you.
Yeah, speaking of Cooperative Extension, one of their environmental horticulturists many years ago, Dennis Pettinger, mentioned that if the cucumber expresses bitterness, it can usually be eliminated by peeling away the skin and outer flesh and removing the stem end, just like you said. Mm-hmm. But he then pointed out the direction of peeling will not have an effect on bitterness, which makes me wonder where that came from.
Yes. Like somehow you're spreading the chemical if you go one way and removing it if you go the other way. I don't know that. I'd never heard that before. I had a girlfriend who would cut the stem end off, skin is still on the cucumber, and then rub it around on the right at the cut, the two parts that were just cut apart, rub them together vigorously, and a foam would form. And she said that got rid of the bitterness. I have not been successful with that.
Okay. But people will try anything to get less bitter cucumbers. And it seems like the best advice is choose hybrid varieties, plant them in the sun, and perhaps, like you mentioned, add mulch on top of that soil in order to help preserve soil moisture.
Yes, it slows down the entrance of moisture from rain, for instance, and makes that rain that may be coming down very hard more gentle on the soil. So you get less soil compaction. And once the water's in the soil, it slows down the loss of water from the soil. And so it moderates that soil moisture, which has commonly, the lack of that moderation has commonly been blamed for the bitterness of cucumbers.
Debbie Flower, thank you for forcing the burp out of the cucumbers for us.
Oh, I love cucumbers, so I'm loving doing it.
Garden Basics comes out every Tuesday and Friday, and it's available just about anywhere podcasts are handed out, and that includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Overcast, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and hey Alexa, play the Garden Basics with Farmer Fred podcast, would you please? Thank you for listening, subscribing, and leaving comments. We appreciate it.